Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast, here at www.bullsbeat.com.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Jonas here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls and a few housekeeping notes before we begin. First, hooray, I've got a iTunes podcast subscription link up again, so you can now go to iTunes, search for the Bulls Beat, and you can download it automatically. So that's nice to hear. And also probably for you guys wondering if I'm really going to stick around or not this time, it's probably a good sign that, yes, I'm going to try and actually stick around because I've gone through the effort to do some technical things. So I'll still be hosting the show up on the Chicago Bullseye. I'm not going to go try and repurchase any domains or anything like that. So that is there. Also, Fred Pfeiffer and I, host of the Bullseye, we're going to try and do a show together as regularly as we can. Those shows will probably end up being linked to both of our podcasts. So if you subscribe to the Bulls Beat, you'll probably get those. If you subscribe to the Bullseye, you'll probably get those as well. We'll see how we figure that out. But I think that's probably what we're going to do. We had a lot of fun recording our show last week together. I think there's maybe too much hype between the two of us. Almost need a dissenting opinion on the show, but that we'll be doing that. Also, I just recorded with Mark from Bulls HQ, so I'm up there with Mark this week. You might actually be able to listen to this show before his show because he's got to go do a bunch of editing, and I'm recording back-to-back, but you're probably not up yet anyway since recording at 6 in the morning, but we'll see how it goes. So you have another opportunity to hear myself on Bulls HQ. Please check out that. So with all of that housekeeping out of the way, let's get into the Bulls talk. And so the Bulls 1-3 in their last four games. They just beat Dallas, which was a prime tanking opportunity to give a win to one of these teams that were sort of chasing in the win column, trying to be bad. But the Bulls pull out the victory at the end and move up to 14 wins. And it's going to be interesting to see how this goes down the line. I do think if the Bulls are able to trade Nikola Mirotic, that they will end up, you know, still in this group of bottom teams. You know, presently at 14 wins, there are six teams with fewer wins than them. So this is they're right on the edge in the seventh spot. None of these teams really are aggressively losing that badly. So I think there is opportunity here for the Bulls to get back into draft position. It's not like there's a couple teams out there that are like scheduled for like 15 wins on the season. Everyone is actually kind of like winning at a decent rate. So if the Bulls are able to trade Nikola Mirotic quickly, I think they can easily finish in the top five area for what will happen with Chicago in the draft. And I think that would be really nice. I think if the Bulls get that top five pick, I think it'll help them a lot. And the Bulls do have to question what they're going to do with Mirotic. He's played well enough now. I mean, he's played at an all-star level for 15 games, and I think that probably has raised his value some. But other teams are going to look at this guy and say, well, it's 15 games. I don't know if I can trust him. He's on a good deal now. I can lock him in for one more year at a good deal. If he plays really great for those 2 years, I'm going to have to re-up on like probably a near max deal. And I don't know if I trust this type of player on a max deal. So there's still, I think, a lot of questions. I don't think the market is going to be so big for Mirotic. But given the Bulls' position, I have to think another team is going to want to take him because this is a chance to get an absolute steal if you are some other team. To get a guy playing at an all-star caliber level who is going to be locked in for another season after this one at an extremely, extremely good rate. I think that is going to be a great opportunity for another team. And realistically, if you're the Bulls, you're probably not going to get more than a mid-round, first-round draft pick for this guy because, one, you don't actually want to bring back a talented player because you're trying to lose. If you could bring back a really talented player, that'd be fine, except no team who's trading for him is going to want to give you a talented player. So it's like super unlikely anyway, but the Bulls don't necessarily want or need that. They actually want to get a little bit worse probably with this trade. So it does line up really well to trade Mirotic to a team who is a contender, but those types of teams also aren't going to have great draft prospects to give you because they're winning games, so their pick is not going to be so good. So now you're looking for teams that have control of some other team's pick that isn't like super high protected. So it like you start putting all this calculus together, and it really comes down to this. You're not going to get much for Nikola Mirotic. It's just not going to happen. And so when I look at this, if I'm Chicago and I know I'm not going to get much return on the court, what I'm looking to do is dump Felicio's contract with Mirotic and say, look, you take these two guys and you're still total money for the value you're getting is pretty good and get us out of this one bad deal here. And then you don't have to give us much, you know, give us a mid first round pick And now, you know, maybe we take one of your deals that's not so great, because you're going to have to match salary anyway. But now we maybe take one of your deals that's not so great, but we take it for a little bit less time. And so we take $20 million on the books for, say, 2 years. And then, you know, then it works out where we kind of have this, like, cap flexibility coming back in a couple seasons. I don't know. You'd have to really kind of look at how you're going to work all of your contracts going forward to see what works for you. Another thought would be you just need to maximize your cap space for next year. Because you're going to have free agent money, and then you're going to have to up Levine if you want to keep him. And so maybe the Bulls never under the cap. So maybe your plan now is, instead of trying to get, you know, more flexibility in the future, to maximize it all this year, in which case you might trade Mirotić and Felicio and just get an expiring deal, and you might not even get any types of picks back, because you're really charging them the $40 million of Felicio's contract is really the value you're saving. I don't know that that's such a great deal, but it's one other way the Bulls might try to extract some value, just because they're not going to get a lot of value back on the court because they're not looking for it. They're not going to get a lot of value back in the draft because the teams with those picks aren't going to trade for him. So this is going to look like a lopsided deal if it goes down. It's going to be a great deal for whomever gets Nikola Mirotić, which is why I still think there should be some suitors. The one exception to this is possibly if you are the Cleveland Cavaliers and you want to make a trade, and you're looking at that Brooklyn pick, and Brooklyn's presently sitting at 15 wins right now. So they've got seven teams below them, and then there's two other teams tied with them. So they're right now picking anywhere between 8th and 10th. And Brooklyn, unlike all these other teams, has no incentive to lose because they don't have their pick. So at the end of the season, these other teams are going to start resting guys and doing whatever, and Brooklyn's not. So you probably realistically have to project this pick out as 10th. And so if you are the Cleveland Cavaliers, you have to start thinking, like, yeah, maybe I would trade for Nikola Mirotić. Now, the question really is, does Cleveland need a guy like Nikola Mirotić with Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson on the roster? Do they need another big? Do they need another stretch guy? But I think if I'm Cleveland, that makes a lot of sense to me to make that type of trade. So that is definitely one type of possibility that I think is out there for the Bulls. And so you start thinking, what would a trade with Cleveland look like? And I think one possibility for this is Iman Shumpert, Channing Frye for Justin Holiday and Nikola Mirotić. This is a deal that, to me, it just takes two guys who really aren't playing for Cleveland. It upgrades their talent considerably. You're still kind of swapping positions on the roster, so the Bulls still get kind of like another big man back, even though Frye's not so great and Shumpert's not so great. So they're trading a guard for a guard and a big for a big. Holiday, I think in this case, you know, he's played pretty decently in some ways. You'd kind of like to see him stick around, but I don't know that Holiday is part of your core. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2 years. So even if he's a solid player, you're going to have to pay him at market value. And whenever you have to pay an average player market value, it really doesn't matter if they come or go. You can get an average player again at market value later. So it just doesn't matter. So even though, you know, I like Holiday a little bit, this is a trade that really upgrades Cleveland in the short term. Both of these guys are there for 2 years. If LeBron wants to do another one of his famous one-year deals, you've now locked in these two talented guys for a couple of years. And I think it helps Cleveland a lot in terms of giving them, you know, Nikola Mirotić gives them the role Channing Frye would like to give him, except he's doing it much, much better. And Justin Holiday is an upgrade over Shumpert. Still is going to give you, you know, some defense, and he's going to give you some shooting. So I think this is a deal that works really well for Cleveland in the short term. Cleveland could then send that Brooklyn pick to the Bulls. Now, they could then add some type of protection on that pick, you know, to say, hey, this pick is like top six protected or something like that, in case Brooklyn falls, you know, really poorly. You know, then Cleveland isn't going to be screwed into giving up this really amazing pick. And then if that happens and the Bulls get Cleveland's pick this year and they get the pick next year or something, you know, like that, you know, some type of scenario where the Bulls will get different assets. You know, but it seems likely that this pick is not going to end up in that direction. Like I said, this pick's probably going to end up right around, you know, 9th or 10th. And so at that value, it's a good pick, but it's not like you're going to likely to change your franchise around by a guy drafted in that position. So I think it's a set of moves that would give Cleveland a much better chance to win. You'd get two guys who are good shooters for them, and I think that would be, you know, a pretty exciting move if you're the Cavs. Now, maybe the Cavs a year ago were thinking like, oh, this pick is going to be just super, super valuable and we're going to be able to do this and that with it. But, you know, right now that pick just isn't looking, you know, so great. You know, it didn't seem like the Nets were a team that was going to rebuild and be, you know, super immediately. But, you know, at this point, I think you would start looking and saying, yeah, you have to start looking at the real value of it right now. So That's kind of like the best case scenario for the Bulls. Any other deal is going to be much worse. If Cleveland is not willing to move that Brooklyn pick, and they might be able to do better for that, I don't know. I'm not sure that you're going to get a better player than Nikola Mirotic for that pick, though. Mirotic right now, PER of 24, is playing like a legitimate all-star player, and he feels like his floor spacing need, doesn't need the ball in his hands a lot, you know, can do a lot of things. And then, again, you're going to upgrade your backup shooting guard as well. It adds a lot of depth to this team. And that's been one of the things that I think has been a problem for this Cavs team is you look at the Warriors are just running out guy after guy after guy you, and the Cavs have not always had the depth. You know, getting someone who can score a lot of volume for you on super high efficiency and stretch the floor and do all these things in Mirotić, I think that's actually something that adds a pretty intriguing angle for the Cavs, allows them to do some pretty neat things by throwing Kevin Love and Nikola Mirotić on the floor at the same time. And now it makes it more difficult to the guard that pick and roll. If you start throwing LeBron and he can now do a pick and roll with Mirotić or with Kevin Love, it's all kinds of options for the Cavs offense. So I think that's pretty intriguing. If it's not that, it's going to be something much worse than that. So I'm going to hope that the Cavs listen to this podcast and feel the same way. But we'll see how it goes. If the Bulls, they should be looking to trade Mirotić right away. It's a weird leverage situation because other teams know the Bulls want to trade him right away. They know the Bulls probably are looking to get bad on this. But the value the Bulls are looking for is also going to be so low, and like realistically, there's not going to be much there, that I think other teams won't really be able to lowball them. It's, you know, it's not like teams can choose, oh, I'll give you a top 10 pick or a top 20 pick. Like, they only have their pick, right? It's not like, and they'll just look at Mirotić, and they should look at him and say, wow, we can get an all-star caliber player for a mid-first-round pick. This is a great deal for us. And he's on a cheap contract for the next rest of this season and next year. He's on this like really value deal. So this is actually a very great opportunity for another team, in my opinion, to upgrade themselves. You know, and I think we'll wait to see how things go. But the Bulls do need to try and get this deal done as soon as they can if they want to start trying to see this impact the wins and see the team, you know, start to have like a little bit more struggles and to ensure that they get that draft position so that they can really come back and play strong next year. Also, with Zach LaVine probably coming back in the next week or so is kind of what we've heard. You know, we'll have to see how he impacts the team. I think that could be very good for the Bulls. I think it could be very bad for the Bulls, good or bad, depending on your perspective. I think it could impact wins or losses. It's just hard to say. Because when a guy comes back and he's used to taking a lot of shots and being a big part of the offense, but his body isn't fully there and he's out of his rhythm, and the Bulls need to adjust to who's getting the shots and who's moving the ball, and now all the rotations have changed around and you have different players playing in different spots with different guys, all of those things can be like very disruptive to the team. And in the short term, especially if LaVine struggles with his shot and with his conditioning, with all this other stuff, in the short term, he might be very poor. Granted, he's probably going to replace Paul Zipser's minutes, so very poor is probably a really low bar in terms of doing better than Zipser. Except I will say, you know, this is kind of when you look back at Derrick Rose, people would say, if Derrick Rose is 80% of Derrick Rose, he's still better than, you know, like 70% of the point guards in the NBA. But if Derrick Rose is scoring is like 80% as good as it used to be, and he's still taking as many shots as when he was 100%, he's actually now like the worst player in the NBA. And so this is one of those things with LaVine. Like, yes, I'm sure LaVine could play better than Paul Zipser, but Paul Zipser really kind of knows his role. He knows what he should do. He plays within his limits, which maybe aren't so great. But Zach LaVine is going to be trying to push his limits. He's going to try and be pushing back to the star player that he was becoming in Minnesota, especially when you consider that this is his free agent year. And Zach LaVine doesn't want to go into free agency averaging like 10 points a game on like 40% shooting and then have to try and decide, what am I going to do? Do I bet on myself by playing out the qualifying offer? Do I take a low ball offer because I actually had a pretty poor season? And, you know, it's a weird situation for both them and for the Bulls because, you know, LaVine was kind of a big piece of this trade. And, you know, now everyone's got to figure out what's going to happen. If LaVine doesn't play really well this year, the Bulls are going to have to guess, like, do we really project that in year two of this ACL recovery that LaVine is going to become the player we thought he was becoming? Or do we start getting scared off, like with Derrick Rose, and be like, oh, crap, you know what? Sometimes guys from ACLs never really become great again. And, you know, we really only saw LaVine play great for like 3 months. Now, granted, he's so young that you would project him to become, you know, better and keep becoming better. So it's a really odd situation. the one nice thing about this situation for Chicago is because Lauri Markkanen has become so good, and because Chris Dunn all of a sudden looks like a player, Zach LaVine, who looked like the feature piece of this trade at one point, now it could be like the least important piece. You know, the Bulls basically took a shotgun blast from this trade. They took three guys who are prospects, and LaVine was kind of viewed as the best one of the three. But the other two already look like they're going to pan out for Chicago. Chris Dunn looks like a player. Lauri Markkanen looks like a player. So it doesn't almost matter as much if LaVine looks like a player. And I think that might impact their willingness to take a big risk financially on LaVine based on how things are going. Now, if you listen to me on Bulls HQ or on the last week's show with Fred Pfeiffer on the Bullseye, you'll know that I have been secretly a Bulls front office homer for a long time. I think a lot of people have accused me of that. I really respect the job that John Paxson and Gar Forman are doing. So I'm going to take a moment just to talk about this. I know it's almost like there's too much positivity in the podcast world with Fred driving the big red bus and being so positive, which is a little weird for me because sometimes I think he in the past was negative or I was positive. And Mark on Bulls HQ is now trying to get back in the swing. But I'm still going to lay it on you. Look, this is an exciting young team. If you were upset about this front office, I want you to stop and think about this. John Paxson takes over in 2003. The team is over the cap. It's in cap hell. It has basically no talent because Jay Williams, has his bike accident. And they were like counting on him to be the franchise player. And, they didn't get one of these elite picks in like a super elite draft because they played just well enough the year before to miss out on like these super franchise players. Like, all this stuff is this lousy scenario. And one season, the Bulls become an exciting, young, quality team. And it was great, right? And so I love that era, that Heimer, Gordon, Dang era. I know it wasn't a championship era, but I love that team. It was so much fun to watch. You saw them getting players from all over the board. That team kind of hits its peak in 06-07. In 07-08, it starts off the season. They're like a dark horse title contender, but everything falls apart because Ben Wallace is just a dick and too old and whatever. I don't want to even go back there. But the team falls apart in one year, they rebuild the team. Now, granted, this took a lot of luck, right? I mean, they got Derrick Rose. So in one year, they got super lucky in that sense. But they still were able to rebuild this team in a single down year. And now, they basically are in this like hedging game, trying to figure out, what to do with Derrick Rose for the last few years, keeping the Bulls kind of in this weird purgatory because still their best odds of a title is like Derrick Rose recovers from his injuries and becomes a superstar player again. And they still, if that had happened, they still had kept enough core guys around to build a title run around it. Now, it didn't happen. Like, it just didn't happen. And so now the Bulls, like, they look and they do something around Jimmy Butler. They basically do a holding the fort move, and at some point they decide, look, this isn't going to work. We have to do a rebuild. And so now we're, like, in one year of, like, deciding that they need to rebuild the thing after basically just trying to see if they could do some other stuff for a few years, which I still think was probably the percentage play, even though I knew it wasn't going to work out. I said the day Derrick Rose tore his ACL, we should see if we can trade him right away and just start over. This is going to be terrible. In retrospect, that would have been the right move. I completely understand why it wasn't made because the odds of that working out for you would have been like really low too. It would have signed you up for probably years of things not being great. So I completely get why that didn't happen and why they kept trying to play this low percentage chance of Derrick Rose coming back healthy, because getting a superstar is so difficult that if he did come back healthy, that's probably more likely than being able to get bad enough to get one and then get the pick and then pick the right guy and all this other stuff in the lottery. So it was all fine. Now the Bulls are starting to rebuild and everyone thinks this is terrible, blah, blah, blah. This is going to be this huge plan. Even I thought this is probably going to be a three-year plan. And now I'm looking at this team right now and I'm looking at the talent on this team and I'm going, there's no reason the Bulls are not a playoff team next year. There's no reason they're not. Like, this team has got like young talent now all of a sudden. Like, the cupboard is full. It's been one year that the Bulls are in a suffering spot for fans, and we're going to rebuild and we're going to be a good quality team. That is fun to watch. Like, it's fun to watch this team play again. And so you have this general manager team that has gone through the ups and downs of how the NBA goes. I still think, like, if Derrick Rose doesn't tear his ACL, the Bulls have probably a 50% chance to have won a title in that era and would be like an elite team today. Like, imagine if that didn't happen. You would have Jimmy Butler, who now looks like clearly a top 10 player, Derrick Rose, who was like a clearly a top 10 player, Nikola Mirotic playing like an all-star, you know, you would have had like a lot of like great talented, you know, pieces that the Bulls were able to keep together. So this is a front office that's been able to find talent even when they've not had great draft positions. Bobby Portis looks like a great draft pick right now. Denzel Valentine in year two all of a sudden doesn't look like a complete bust. Doesn't look great, but it was still a terrible draft. And now still looks like a pretty solid player for where the Bulls draft. You're still down to like they've made some mistakes. Every general manager team makes some mistakes. And I think this is one of the really hard things that fans struggle with when judging a general manager team. This year, look, they signed Felicio. Terrible move. They completely screwed that up. It was an awful move in retrospect. At the time, I thought, this looks okay. This guy, he's young. He's emerging. This is really the equivalent of an MLE-style contract they gave him. If he busts out, this is a really good deal. Didn't happen. They took a chance on what is like really kind of moderate NBA money at this point of time. $8 million sounds like it's a pretty big contract. But under today's TV deal, it really isn't much anymore. So you know, they took a chance. It didn't work out. Bad move, right? But that is just how it goes. You know, it's like every time the general management team has to make a move on every single player, there's a chance that it's a good move, a bad move, or a neutral move. And so people will look at things and they'll say like, oh, they screwed up this, 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 and this. Here's four things they screwed up. Well, you know, how many roster moves did they make over the last, you know, year? And so if they screwed up two of them and they did like seven of them, you know, really good and five of them average, that's really outstanding performance. Like each move is like very difficult. So, you know, to never be wrong is impossible. Like every team is wrong at times. And that's just how it goes. You go look at the draft for any team in the NBA. Every team is wrong all the time. And so it's just like, you know, your electricity. When your electricity goes out, you're like, oh my God, shake your fist at the electricity company. But like your electricity just works like all the time. You know, like you expect 100% performance. And people expect 100% performance out of their general manager. This is why every team hates the general manager, or every fan hates the general manager of their team if things aren't going great. It's just like a default position because it's just such a difficult job. And for the most part, you are judged only on your misses. And people ignore your successes. It's like, well, that was obvious, or I would have done that too, or like whatever. The Bulls have a lot of non-obvious successes. They have a lot of picks that people hated that have become really great. Lauri Markkanen's another. Jimmy Butler was one. Taj Gibson was one. Nikola Mirotic, I think everyone kind of liked at the time, thought that was a good pick. But so they have a history of taking guys that fans hate, but then become like really, really great, best player available, like just generationally good picks. So hats off to Chicago's management. I'm a homer. I'm a fan. You're going to have to deal with it just the way it is. I'm with Fred. I'm on the big red bus, and that's how it goes. So anyway, maybe I've convinced you, maybe not. Maybe you still hate the front office. I know that's the view of most of the people out there, and I get it. I get why you're frustrated. I get why it feels like the Bulls have done really poorly over the past few years, and I think a lot of things have gone really bad over the past few years. Doug McDermott is like the one thing that stands out. It was just so terrible. It was so terrible on the way in. It was so terrible on the way out that it's really hard to look past that. It's really hard. If they had not just screwed up that one trade, the Bulls would just have a perfectly clean record. But like I said, you look over time, they've done very well. And even some of these picks now, we were like kind of questioning in saying like maybe they had lost their touch. You know, now I'm seeing Bobby Portis play really well, and I'm thinking like, nope, that was still a great, great pick at the time that pick was made. And so the Bulls, I think they're still showing that they can do really well. Lauri Markkanen was a guy I did not think would always going to be a player, and immediately has proven me wrong, and now looks like a guy who has extremely high floor, and we'll see where his ceiling is at. I don't think he's got superstar ceiling, but heck, at number seven, he's already proven to be a very strong player in the NBA. This is a guy who's going to be an above-average starting caliber player as kind of his floor, and at number seven, I think that's very good value. So the Bulls have done really an outstanding job in the draft, and now this year, when you're starting to see these dividends pay off again, you have to start go back and look and say, nope, they still really kind of do have it for the most part. You know, this Doug McDermott thing was the outlier. Every team makes mistakes. They made one with Tyrus Thomas like much earlier. You know, they made one with Ben Wallace and dumping Tyson Chandler. You know, there are times where they have screwed things up, but that is just what teams do. They don't get everything right. On the whole, their decisions are very good. On the whole, when you look at most of their trades, they win more than they lose. And the thing that like, oh, they can't trade for a superstar, so they're lousy. That's just not a realistic comparison. If you look at it that way, almost every team in the NBA is lousy. There's very few teams that are able to trade for superstars. The superstars frequently control the team they want to go to, and more so than the front office and dealing with each other. You know, the superstar often has a lot of say in what is happening. And so I just think this front office, it's not the best in the league. It might not be in the top five in the league. But honestly, I think they are a top 10 front office in the NBA. And if these guys got fired, I guarantee you teams would be lining up to take them. They would be lining up. When you look at how well this team is drafted, they would be lining up to take these guys. You look at how well they generally do in their trades and how they actually operate with a small market capacity, because the Bulls ownership is very frugal. And you know what? Hey, I'm kind of okay with that. There's actually some sense in that of saying we're only going to pay big money for when we have a chance to win a title, because it actually makes it possible for the Bulls to make these quick restarts. The fact that they never let themselves get into such a bad situation because they are very fiscally responsible allows them the flexibility to do a lot of things and always have like some maneuverability. I never think it's a good idea to box yourself in and go all in on a team that really is, you know, a step away, because then you're like, oh, we're a step away, but we can't do anything. And so I'm kind of okay with how they do that. But they make a lot of very fiscally responsible deals. And even though that's not exciting as a fan, it's definitely exciting if you're an owner to see a front office that can function without going into the luxury tax and still, you know, consistently find quality players, consistently find ways to rebuild their team quickly. You know, how much do you think Charlotte would love to have, you know, like the Bulls' ability to keep doing that, or some of these other franchises that have been bad for so long and just struggled to get better? There's so many teams that are just like stuck in the cellar and can't get out of it. I actually think, you know, things could be so much worse. And I'll say this is sort of like when Lovie Smith left the Bears, and you know, he hasn't gone on to be great after that. But when he left the Bears, everyone's like, oh, things are going to be so much better. No, they've been like a complete train wreck since he left. Like, he actually, you know, did a very, very nice job with the Bears his entire tenure there. The team played hard, but people ignored everything he was bringing to the table, and they only focused on the things he wasn't bringing to the table. And then once he left, they figured all the stuff that he did good was just going to stick around, but it all left with him. And now the next guy, maybe he's better at things A and B that Smith was terrible at, but he was worse at, you know, D, E, F, G, and H, and I, J, K, and now all of a sudden the team is a train wreck. There's also other things to that team. They're aging. This is not a perfect example, but that is the type of thing. It's easy to look past the strengths that your guys bring and only look at the weaknesses. And I'm not saying the Paxton Foreman regime is without weaknesses. It absolutely is. They're, like I said, I'm not saying they're number one, but they're very good. And if they leave, the odds are very, very high that you're going to get someone much, much worse in here. It's just very high that that's how it's going to be. So we'll see how that goes. As for the Bulls going forward, there's a long rant about the front office. I apologize for that. Looking at some of the players, you know, and looking at this this trade that went on this summer, I think it's really a fun trade to analyze. And we talked a little bit about this on my Bulls HQ appearance with Mark. But when you look at this, this was a trade at the time. I didn't like it. I thought, like, wow, the Bulls got really screwed in this deal. I'm not a fan of, you know, any of these things. The odds of getting someone great at number seven, you know, probably not so high. Chris Dunn looks like a complete bust, and Zach LaVine's got a torn ACL. This is going to be a train wreck. Well, you know what? The Bulls saw in Dunn turned out to be accurate, because now you look at Dunn and you're like, this guy is really a player. This guy could be very, very good in the NBA. Now, I think we still have to wait and see how it goes with him. I think his floor is still pretty low because his efficiency and his turnovers are like a little out of control, and his scoring is all over the board. But he has shown flashes of like real legit like star potential. And so we'll see if he's able to deliver that. The one thing I like is that efficiency and turnovers are two of the most likely things to improve that a young player is going to have. They're two of the most likely things. So I think there's a pretty good chance that Dunn is going to, you know, improve these areas considerably and become a, you know, at least a starting caliber point guard. He might be, probably really is a starting caliber point guard already, but like a good starting caliber point guard. Now, it's a point guard driven league, so we'll, you know, good is actually kind of interesting when you think of how many amazing point guards are in the league right now. But he will be a very good player and an exciting player. So I think that has been very good. I think obviously Lauri Markkanen, it looks like he has a star potential. And so that is very good as well. And so now the assets the Bulls got back all of a sudden are looking like much better. On the other hand, you know, you start the season out and you're like maybe not so high and these assets. Dunn was, you know, out for a while and blah, blah, blah. And so it's like the Bulls aren't getting as much back out of the trade. But then Butler's also playing really poorly, so the Timberwolves aren't getting much back. And now Butler has like launched himself into the MVP race. He's playing like, you know, truly outstanding basketball. And so what Minnesota got back is also like looking much higher. It looks like a classic win-win trade for me. Both teams kind of got what they wanted. The Timberwolves really needed to get a player like Butler. They need more concentrated star talent to put in their guys. You know, they need to make this push into the playoffs that they're not really having done that now. They're really doing that, and they're fourth in the West, and they're a team. You know, maybe the West has actually suddenly dropped off tremendously in its talent ability, where it used to be like, oh, the West has all these great teams. And now when you look at the West, it's like when you look at Minnesota as the fourth best team, they're 24-16. And even though they're like, you know, playing much better, I don't think Minnesota really scares anyone. And so the West has really kind of dropped off with, you know, the Clippers falling apart and, you know, the Thunder sort of quasi coming together now. They have this big three, but they've not really clicked super well. I was never really high on this because I wasn't a huge Paul George fan. And I thought Carmelo Anthony, I've never been a huge fan of his either, but he's also now past his prime. So I thought, like, this is one of those scenarios, kind of like when Pippen and Barkley and Olajuwon all came together in Houston, where it was just, like, not the right fit. And, like, you know, all those guys were maybe a little too old at that time compared to this. Really, only Anthony is too old at this point. But it is kind of, to me, like one of those things where the fit was always a little bit dicey. So we'll see how that goes for them. But, like, all of a sudden, like, these teams in the West, like, none of them are really – you know, so great anymore. Like, you had the Mavericks have kind of just aged out of the thing. And so the Spurs, the Rockets, and the Warriors are kind of like the big three. And then after that, you've got some good teams, like the Timberwolves, the Thunder, the Nuggets are, you know, some good teams. The Blazers and Pelicans are currently hanging on to the last two spots, you know, just around 500 basketball. But you look at the East, and, you know, all of a sudden it's not, like, so markedly different. You know, I don't know that I believe in the Celtics despite their record. You know, the Raptors have a really nice record, but, I don't really believe in the Raptors either. The Cavs, I think, will be the team that comes out of the East, even though they're third presently. But so, you know, there's maybe a little bit more, I don't want to say there's more balance because the Warriors are still so much better than everyone else. But in terms of, like, the depth of the conferences, it almost feels like they're a little bit more balanced out than they used to be. And if you look at the bottom, you no longer see just, like, you know, the bottom of the East being terrible compared to the bottom of the West. You don't see the bottom of the playoff bracket of the East and West being highly disparate as you did in the past. You know, you look now, actually, the talent level between the two, besides the fact that maybe the Warriors are the best team by far in the league, the rest of it seems kind of even to me. You know, like, even though, you know, the Rockets, people might say, like, oh, they're super legit, I don't really believe in the Rockets all that much either. You know, like, I can't say I believe in the Rockets more than I believe in the Celtics, who have, you know, a good record. So I do think it is a little bit more parity in the NBA in terms of conferences than there was in the past. So anyway, moving on, I think it'll be fun to watch this team. I think it'll be fun to see how this trade works out and how it really kind of is a win-win for both of these teams, where the Minnesota Timberwolves really kind of got what they needed out of this. You know, they probably weren't going to take Lauri Markkanen, and they probably would have taken some other guy just because of the way things go. Lauri, I don't think, was a consensus pick, you know, where the Bulls took him. And so, you know, they can't judge the trade based on how Lauri does. They have to judge the trade based on how Jimmy Butler does for him. And he's delivering real value for them. And from the Bulls' perspective, they have to be really happy. I think they're set up to really, like I said, they're set up to make the playoffs next year, in my opinion, or at least to be fighting for a spot, like, you know, in this, like, 500-ish type of range. Even assuming that they trade Mirotić this year, I assume they tank down, they get another, like, pretty good player. I'm not going to assume that whoever they get that gives them star impact right away, but I'm going to assume that they get a pretty good player that maybe gives them a Lauri impact right away next year if they get a top, you know, 5 or 6 pick. And then hopefully they get another draft pick for Nikola Mirotić. I think they'll probably get a mid first rounder. I don't think, even though I hyped it up a bunch earlier, I don't think the deal with Cleveland is super likely. But if they're able to get, like, a type of pick from someone, then all of a sudden I think, you know, now you've got your own pick, you've got the second pick, you've already got a bunch of young pieces on your core, you've got a lot of cap room, you got a lot of flexibility, you got a lot of chances. It'll be interesting to see what the Bulls could do. And then you start looking at who the Bulls could chase in free agency when they have all this cap room. And you wonder, let's just say for the sake of argument, that the Bulls could bring in Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins. Would you be excited about that? Because everyone seems to think, like, everyone's going to L.A. and LeBron could go to L.A. Why would anyone go to L.A.? Just answer this question for me. Now, maybe L.A. will actually be in the same situation where I thought the Bulls would be, because L.A. presently has the second worst record in the NBA. So now I thought that, you know, the Lakers would maybe be a teeny bit better than that. But now maybe they get one of these franchise players in a draft, and all of a sudden it's exciting. But I don't know why anyone is excited about LA. I don't know why anyone is excited about Lonzo Ball. This is like, I thought this from the very beginning. Like, everyone is talking about Lonzo Ball, who's the number two pick in the draft. Like, this guy is a can't-miss star. He's a superstar. There's a reason why he wasn't picked number one. You know, and I guess, like, in defense of Lonzo, kind of what I said about Chris Dunn, you know, Lonzo's got a 35% field goal percentage right now. His true shooting percentage is just an abysmal 43%. And he's got all kinds of problems with his offensive scoring. But those are the areas that typically guys make improvements in. My fear with Lonzo is he's got a completely broke-looking shot. So you start looking at guys and you're trying to get them to have consistency on their jumper. When a guy is, like, you know, terrible form, it's, like, really hard to fix that. You know, if you remember Marquise Teague for the Bulls, this is a guy, he's like the anti-unicorn. And he was, like, the only player I could think of who was fast enough to consistently get to the basket, creative enough ball handler to get to the basket, but then was still terrible. Like, anyone who could do those things usually is at least serviceable, but Marquise Teague was terrible. And a couple of things is he couldn't finish, he didn't have court vision, and he had no chance to ever shoot because he had this jacked up form. And I just wonder if Lonzo Ball is one of these guys who's just, like, never really going to have great shooting. Now, everything else about his game is great. This is a guy who's obviously an amazingly gifted court vision guy. He's a good rebounder. He's a good passer. But, like, he cannot score. And if he can't score, his upside is going to be somewhat dicey. Now, scoring is one of those things that tends to come. He could be Jason Kidd, who was not a great scorer, but was clearly much better than Lonzo Ball was. But it's going to be an interesting thing. I think Ricky Rubio is really, like, my comparison for Lonzo Ball. And I know that crosses the you can never compare a black player to a white player thing. But he's Ricky Rubio. He's this guy who's just, like, a wizard with the ball and can do a lot of things, but he can't score. And so what does that leave you with? I just don't think Lonzo Ball, like, the Lakers have tried to hype this up as, like, he's going to be this, like, superstar and players who want to play with him. If I'm another player, I'm not looking at Lonzo Ball like, oh, I got to play with that. Like, yeah, fine. He's a good passer. I'm sure he'll find me in some spots. But if I'm a superstar, I'm going to have the best. No one's going to leave me open. I'm not going to be like, you know, it's just not going to, you know, have the ball in your hands. The ball's in this guy's hands who can't score as much. I don't see him being this big draw of, like, everyone thinks, like Paul George and LeBron James are going to go to L.A. I don't see it. And then maybe they get one of these elite draft picks, and that gives them the chance with Ingram, Ball, and this draft pick, and then the lot of cap space to say, oh, look, we got all these young guys. You come here. I don't think veteran players look at that situation and are like, oh, they've got three young guys, but they were just like the second to worst team in the NBA. But they're clearly the young guys are going to be superstars this year, so I can win a title. LeBron James isn't looking to be part of a four-year rebuild, you know, and neither is Paul George. These are guys who want to win next year. You know, no matter what the Lakers do in the draft, it's going to be hard for them to convince anyone that they're ready to do that. And the Bulls are kind of in the same boat, but I actually think, you know, the Bulls have much more proven young talent around them than the Lakers do. So going back to this, I still think it's extraordinarily unlikely that these types of players are going to look at Chicago and say they have a chance. But let's just say for the sake of argument, just bear with me for a second. If the Bulls could sign DeMarcus Cousins and Paul George and then still get Zach LaVine because his cap hold is small because of his bird rights, they probably would have had to have moved Felicio with Mirotić and whatever deal that goes. And they draft some dude, we'll say, they do the Cavaliers deal and they get, you know, maybe the 10th pick, and then they have their own pick, which is now maybe, we'll say, like the 5th pick. All of a sudden, that team looks like it's stacked for like a few years, like it really would. So the Bulls actually have some pretty intriguing possibilities next year. Now, very, very high odds they're not going to get either of those players, and they're probably going to not actually have a big splash in free agency, because after that, I think that the drop-off in terms of who's available and who you want to spend money on goes down quite a bit. So I think the Bulls will probably focus on keeping their core intact, probably find more guys like your Justin Holidays, guys that look like solid players that you're going to pick up for a few seasons at reasonable rates, you know, kind of like they brought in Kyle Korver, CJ Watson, and Ronnie Brewer, like in 1 year. And all three guys were like really kind of short-term value contracts with, you know, that were very tradable because they had non-guaranteed years on the end. And these guys, you know, they were like quality role players. I think you're going to maybe see something like that. And then the hope for the Bulls to build off of their draft prospects and their current core, and then, you know, see what happens. Now, if they can lure a star, sure, they should definitely do it, because I do think they have the pieces supporting that type of player to become a really great team right away. And even if they don't lure a star, I think this is a team that's probably going to be around a 500 team next year. So that is my love fest for the Chicago Bulls and what might happen over the next year. Thank you for listening. Oh, my God, 40 minutes. I really just went over the top. So hopefully you're running and, you know, I've now made you push an extra mile on your run today. And it was great talking to you all. Happy to be back. Happy to be doing the show. You can follow me on Twitter. I am Doug_Tonis on Twitter. And look out for the Bulls Beat now back on iTunes, and I'll talk to you guys next week.